Get ready for real time, prime time, big time, show time. It's Edible Honesty time. And in the meantime, get ready for your favorite partner in crime, your host, one of the greatest talkers of all time, the king of Edible Honesty, the eighth wonder of the world, Andrew the Giant.
Hey, hey, my, hot, rockin' apple pie. Let's get down and let's talk about the ins and outs of the food industry. My name is Andrew. I'm your host, and I am ready to rock. So let's cut right into it, because today we will be reshuffling, rearranging, readjusting, reorganizing, and reclassifying almost every single thing you thought you reliably knew about food. And in all edible honesty, I stand at great risk. And just like Galileo did in the year 1616 for telling the truth. And I know there is great risk for me once I spill all of this edible tea, because the edible powers that be don't want us to have the correct edible information. Rather, they quite enjoy that we are of the belief that the edible world that we live in is flat. Essentially, the edible powers that be would like for us to mindlessly consume and not think and instantly reply that the edible world is, of course, flat. But it's not. The edible world is round. The edible world is round just like memorable characters in literature are round. And round characters are quite complex and undergo a myriad of changes and developments throughout the course of their entire lifetime that quite often results in shocking and stunning the reader and catching the reader quite off guard. So this is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed. You believe whatever you want to believe. But if you take the red pill, you stay in edible honesty wonderland. And I show you just how deep the edible rabbit hole goes. Now, Neo, for a little historical perspective, Galileo was sent to the Roman Inquisition for affirming that the earth was round, which we know today to be entirely true. But back in Galileo's day, the Roman government and the church in the year 1616, why, they had total and complete power, just like Papa Smurf does as the autonomous ruler of Smurf Village. And the words and the proclamations of the Roman government and church, they were unquestionably the law, period, exclamation Smurf. And the Roman government and the church, they ridiculed Galileo and his science as heresy. And so they sent Galileo to prison, and all for essentially possessing a once-in-a-lifetime scientific brilliance. And instead, what the Roman government and the church defiantly did was triumphantly and falsely declare that the earth was, and I am paraphrasing here, flat as a pancake, thunderbolt and lightning. Very, very frightening me. Galileo, Figaro, Magnifico. Allow me to open your eyes, Neo, and you will see that the edible world is round, quite round indeed. So, ask yourself, are you ready? Are you ready to free your edible mind? Enter the very dark room where Morpheus is handing out red pills of knowledge, and take one. Now, ask yourself, ever have that feeling where you're not sure if you're awake or still dreaming? Hello? Neo? Welcome back. Now, in the ruins of a prehistoric village near the town of Bedrock, in the city of Jericho, in the West Bank, scientists uncovered the ancient remains of figs that are the earliest known cultivated fruit crop to ever be discovered on this planet. Yabba dabba doo. Now, what makes the discovery of these prehistoric figs that were uncovered in Jericho one of the most historic and significant edible scientific discoveries of all time is that these cultivated figs represent the very first piece of edible evidence anywhere ever on this earth of domesticated food production. Or let's phrase it another way. These figs literally represent the dawn of agriculture. And these ancient figs that were unearthed and discovered in Jericho, they were cultivated over 12,000 years ago, which, for proper perspective, was a time when saber-toothed tigers, American lions, and woolly mammoths still actively roam the American landscape. So, quite literally, this edible discovery of 12,000-year-old figs, it literally blows up every single thing we thought we knew and edibly believed, because it pushes our definition of the dawn of agriculture back in time. Back another 2,000 years. Way back. Way further back than anyone had previously thought before. And now, we have normality. I repeat, we have normality. Douglas Adams. But here's the thing, and this may throw everyone out there listening for a major loop, like a Sandy Koufax overhand looping 12-6 curveball kind of loop. Because every fruit has its secret, D.H. Lawrence. But the real secret that figs have been keeping from the public and for millions and millions of years is that dramatic pause. Figs are not actually fruits at all. No, sir, no way, it's not possible. Because figs are dramatic pause. Edible flowers that have been masquerading as fruits and for millions and millions of years. Oh, and I know exactly what you're thinking. What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here, Taggart? So, what do you think? What do you think figs witnessed all those millions of years ago to have to go into permanent, edible witness protection and to have to masquerade and as a fruit and for millions and millions of years, no less? I mean, come on. Masquerading as a fruit is not a very dignified persona for an edible flower. But here's my safe guess. My safe guess is that figs witnessed the world's first prehistoric mafia murder and millions of years ago. And they have been in permanent, edible witness protection ever since. Because let's face it, figs are still around today, but regardless of what figs might have witnessed all those millions of years ago, figs, I repeat, figs are definitely not fruits. Figs are simply edible flowers. Figs have been highly misclassified and for a very long time. Now, misclassified, by definition, is to classify wrongly an entire species. So, rather, properly classified, figs simply are the world's tastiest, upside down, inside out, edible flowers anywhere on earth ever. Holy upside down, inside out, edible flowers, Batman. Now, not only are figs upside down and inside out edible flowers, but they also have an extremely unique pollination process that requires dramatic pause. Wasps instead of bees. Surely, you can't be serious. I am serious. And stop calling me Shirley. You see, what happens in nature? The female wasps, they lay their eggs in male figs. And male figs are the type of figs that we don't eat. But sometimes, very often, the female wasp will accidentally enter a female fig, which is an extremely lethal mistake, like Audrey 2 kind of lethal. So feed me, Seymour. Feed me all night long. Ha ha! So here's what happens in nature. The female wasp, when she accidentally lays her eggs inside the female fig, well, the female wasp dies inside that female fig that she accidentally laid her eggs inside. And the female wasp ends up decomposing inside that female fig. Now, eventually, this female fig with a decomposed female wasp inside it will go to market. This little figgy went to market. Then this little fig, this female fig with a decomposed female wasp inside of it will be sold. So then this little figgy went home. And then ultimately, this female fig with a decomposed wasp inside of it will be served to someone, probably a vegan. But that female fig has the carcass of a decomposed female wasp right at the heart of its savory center. So, holy, figs are not vegan? Batman. Now, this tale of the fig, why it probably all sounds like an edible episode of Stranger Things, with an upside down world and female wasps dying and decomposing inside of female figs, and of course the proverbial cherry on top, the hard edible reality that figs are not vegan at all. But in this case, in this particularly very real edible episode of Stranger Things, figs and wasps actually do have an unusually dark and deadly symbiotic mutualistic relationship, because in nature, figs rely on female wasps to pollinate the flowers that are trapped well inside, and fig wasps, they need a safe place to lay their eggs. This all actually happens, Eleven. And friends don't lie. Okay, so give me ham on five and hold the mayo. What's that? Oh, we're back. So now that we blew the lid off of figs, and we all know that they're no longer vegan, let's rip the lid right off of chili peppers, because if every fruit has its secret, well, darling, this one is a doozy. Because chili peppers have been successfully guarding one of the biggest edible secrets in history, and it's millions and millions and millions of years old. So grab another red pill, and let's reveal the real truth about chili peppers. But before we descend any further down the rabbit hole, let's all embrace the concept of an edible, spherical world. And in the words of Buddha, and I'm paraphrasing, there are three things that cannot hide for long: the moon, the sun, and the edible truth. Now, hot chilies, chili peppers, they make their first edible appearance almost 20 million years ago, as archaeologists found chili seeds in the excrement of prehistoric birds that had flown long, long distances. And in all edible honesty, it is all but an edible certainty that it was because of this migratory method of prehistoric birds that these chili pepper seeds, and probably most prehistoric fruit seeds, were distributed across the globe. But here's the thing, and this one will definitely shock you, because I'm trying to free your mind. Neo, but I can only show you the door. You're the one that has to walk through it. So what if I told you everything, every single thing you thought you knew about chili peppers was an elaborate lie? And it's all been designed to keep the public knowledge free of the reality about chili peppers, while the edible powers that be laugh at us as we obediently sit and roll over for the edible powers that be, while they intentionally dose us with a mind-altering drug in chili peppers to control and predict our behavior. And we happily take these edible chili peppers, these drugs. And from the moment we awake to the moment we slumber, whether it be in our beloved flaming hot Cheetos to our beloved morning ghost pepper Dunkin' Donut. And it's all been so perfectly arranged so as to achieve maximum desired impact and maximum desired consumer effect. And it's all been so perfectly orchestrated by the edible powers that be, and all to provide us with loads of edible misinformation, and also they could peddle a delicious, profitable, and most mind-altering drug on the edible marketplace. And it's really no different than LSD, and it's absolutely facsimile to licking a poisonous cane toad. And one lick, and yeah, purple haze all in my eyes. And that's all. That's all chili peppers are. Edible, hallucinatory drugs that make us believe we're literally on fire. And from the inside out, no less. The edible question we have to ask ourselves is, how many licks of the poisonous cane toad lollipop are we going to take, Mr. Owl? One. Two. Three. It all depends on how high we want to fly. And the Simpsons, they literally did an entire episode on this and the conspiracy to conceal the truth about chili peppers is so massive that we had to call in Fox Mulder and just about every single edible player in the entire game is involved in it. And the truth, the edible reality about chili peppers, well, that truth would shatter the public's trust permanently, and it would be irreversibly financially crippling. Colonel Jessup, did you order the code red? You want answers? I want the truth. You can't handle the truth. Now, in all reality, people consume chili peppers for a number of reasons. But the primary reason that chili peppers are consumed is because the people who eat them dig the rush. Yeah, baby. That they get from eating spicy food. And oh boy, the endorphins that are released. Why, it makes eating chili peppers edibly euphoric. Because when the body releases endorphins, why, they release opioids. And opioids are just lots and lots and lots of good old-fashioned morphine, or call it what you want, heroin. You know, the good stuff. And the spicier the chili, or the more Scoville units that a particular chili possesses, the bigger the rush. And with a bigger rush, even more endorphins are released. And the edible euphoria, it only increases. Which means more heroin is released. Yummy. And the stronger the Scoville units, the higher we get. And the more intense the edible hallucinations become. Holy edible hallucinations, Batman. Now, hedonism, by definition, is the pursuit of pleasure or sensual self-indulgence. And chili pepper eaters are most definitely hedonists that seek out edible thrills, and even more importantly, they live for the rush. I mean, come on. All of that heroin? Yummy. And edible hedonism, my term, by my definition, is edible, sensual, guiltless self-indulgence, resulting in moments of edible orgasmic pleasure and moments of sadistic edible pain. And it's all very Descartes, because Rene Descartes theorized that pleasure and pain coexist in a continuum. And it was Sigmund Freud himself who said we are never so defenseless against suffering as when we love. Therefore, edible hedonism is quite literally the pursuit of edible S&M, and that's kinky. Yeah, baby! And with chilies, like everything else we choose to experience in life, there are those with defined limits, and there are those without any limitations whatsoever. And chili peppers, due to their kinky, inherent, mind-altering, hallucinatory chemical called capsaicin, why, the mere act of simply ingesting one chili pepper, due to its instant ability to have anyone hallucinating and almost instantaneously, is capable of transporting all of us on a magic carpet ride to an Alice in Wonderland-like world where rocking horse people eat marshmallow pies. And the entire edible industry, the entire edible chili pepper industry, has built up an entire global empire. And it revolves around maintaining a mystique about the edible mythology of chili peppers. And the edible mythology about chili peppers is, whatever chili pepper you eat, it speaks volumes about you and your personality. Because for crying out loud, athletic endeavors, global eating competitions are held around the world, where the edible point is to demonstrate who can eat the most lava. Or the edible point of these edible competitions could be to see who can consume the world's hottest chili peppers. So ask yourself, how hot can you take it? Because the Scoville scale measures the heat of a particular chili pepper, and it is recorded in Scoville heat units. And the range of particular pepper's heat, reflected by a Scoville score, is from 100 to over 3 million. 100 is a sweet pepper. It may as well be a grape. 3 million, in theory, we're starting to look at edible lava. But let me show you a different and more accurate way to view and interpret the Scoville scale. Because the secret, the edible secret that chili peppers have been hiding, and for over 20 million years, is that no matter what chili pepper you put in your mouth, no matter what the Scoville scale says, all chili peppers, and I mean all chili peppers, are entirely free from heat. No one on this planet at any point in history has ever even remotely burned their lips, and no mouths have ever been on fire. In fact, the hard reality is that in all edible honesty, chili peppers are not even capable of burning your mouth because they contain no heat. Surely, you can't be serious. I am serious. And stop calling me Shirley. Chili peppers. I repeat. Neo. Chili peppers. They do not burn your mouth. We've been fed an enormous edible lie. And all to propagate an enormous and seemingly unstoppable edible empire in chili peppers. Okay, so if chili peppers have no heat, what in the wide, wide world of sports are we experiencing, Taggart? Well, what we are experiencing is a government-sanctioned, edible hallucination. And believe me, when I tell you, it's way more intense than LSD. Therefore, ergo, the Scoville scale does not measure the heat of a pepper because there is none. What the Scoville scale does accurately do is allow the eater to know just how many licks they took of a poisonous cane toad. And the edible reality is that we are not experiencing any real burning sensation at all. And yet, the hallucination lasts so long, and it's so intense, that even the next day, when we sit down on the toilet, we're convinced that we are literally shitting fire. Because even by the time the digested chili peppers reaches our anus, and sometimes it could be as long as 24 hours later, there's still so much capsaicin in our food waste that our butts feel like they are literally shooting fire. So now, the next day, even our butts are hallucinating. And I know people who are simply afraid to poop because they can't handle the burn of the chili pepper on the way out. But none of it, and I mean none of it, is real. It's just an anal hallucination. Because our butts are actually hallucinating the next day. Holy anal hallucinations, Batman. And it's really all just mind over matter. It's all psychosoma. None of the heat from chili peppers that we experience in our minds is ever real. It's all in our heads. And that is the 20 million year old secret about chili peppers. Surely you can't be serious. I'm serious. And stop calling me Shirley. Now, the edible world basically comes down to two primary choices: chocolate and vanilla. And in the year 1519, the old world was simultaneously introduced to both cacao and vanilla, by Hernando Cortez, and the edible legend is that Cortez was served a hot beverage mixture of both cacao and vanilla by the Aztec emperor himself, Montezuma, and that both flavors were so beloved by the Spanish conqueror Cortez that he brought both the cacao and vanilla and the beverage back to Europe as an edible treasure from the New World. And today, in the year 2020, around the world, vanilla is the most popular flavor anywhere in the world, period, exclamation smurf. But vanilla is really considered to possess what is known for being throughout the entire edible world. It's known mostly as a default status, in that it's usually synonymous for basic, plain, harmless. Just think of ice cream. Plain as vanilla. But nothing could be further from the edible truth, because vanilla is the second most expensive herb or spice anywhere in the world. And that's just after saffron. And saffron costs $1,200 a pound. Now, vanilla beans, they come from a tropical orchid that is native to Mexico. And vanilla is so expensive because growing and harvesting it is so labor intensive, because each vanilla flower is hand pollinated and each vanilla bean is hand picked. Vanilla is a lost art form. However, the USDA Nutritional Food Group defines vanilla bean, and vanilla extract as belonging members of the spice and herb family. But that's just not true. And I went around and I took a survey about what is vanilla. Is it a spice? Is it an herb? Is it an edible flower? Is it a grain? Is it a fruit? Or is it a sea vegetable? And out of the 200 people polled, absolutely no one, not one individual person, properly identified what vanilla bean, and vanilla extract actually was. And I thought to myself, this is like suddenly an entire planet identifying cats as dogs or birds as rats. And there it sits in your American supermarket, in your global supermarket around the world. And always, every single time, in the wrong aisle. So that's probably why no one on the planet knows what vanilla is. But vanilla is a true medicinal food that has been worshipped for centuries. And vanilla is a superfood. It's especially powerful at enhancing our brain and our mood health. But vanilla is not a spice. It's not an herb. It's not an edible flower. And it's not a sea vegetable. Vanilla is a super fruit. And vanilla is the only edible fruit of the orchid family. And there are still over 150 varietals of vanilla on this planet left today. And the thing about vanilla that makes it absolutely the antithesis of plain or generic is that every single vanilla variety is an entirely, purely organic plant-based superfood. And vanilla is the most versatile fruit on the planet. And the detail and the genetic coding that goes into vanilla, it's simply unexplainable. Because no two vanilla beans anywhere, ever, throughout any point in history on this planet have ever been the same in flavor, aroma, or color. That makes vanilla the most unique fruit anywhere on Earth. Holy vanilla bean snowflakes, Batman. So why? Does ice cream have no backbone? I'll have a vanilla. So that's it. That's a wrap on the edible world is really, really round. But tune in next time when we dive down the edible rabbit hole even further and we forage for berries. My name is Andrew. I want to thank you so much for listening. And to all my fans down there in Australia, good day. And a huge edible shout out to Matt Damon, who probably won't be serving figs to his vegan friends anymore. And to everyone else, I've been getting all of your emails and your comments at ediblehonesty.com. And thank you so much. And don't forget to give Edible Honesty a 5-star rating on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. And no, I am not signed by any media outlet yet. But CNN, Food Network, Cooking Channel, Martha Stewart, ABC News, Comedy Central, and whoever else, I'm available. So get in contact with me. And let's work out a deal. And let's get Edible Honesty what it deserves. A syndicated platform. So get ready to tune in next episode for more Edible Honesty. Same edible time, same edible station. The edible matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. It is the world that has been pulled over our eyes to blind us from the edible truth. Colonel Jessup, did you order the code red? I did the job. Did you order the code red? You're goddamn right I did!